Hi, I'm Lori Fisher with Rethink Home Interiors. I can help you get your home sold quickly. How? Let me help you stage your home to sell. It's still a buyer's market, so let me help you separate your house from all of the others on the market. You can call today for your personal staging evaluation. Contact me for an appointment at 610-724-1108 or visit me at rethinkhomeinteriors.com.
Good morning and welcome to Balanced Life. I'm Renee Gable with In Touch Marketing Concepts. Today I'm excited. We have Lori Fisher from Rethink Home Interiors. Good morning, Lori. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. Lori has a fun job. Lori is a full-service real estate staging company. So, Lori, since this is your first time on the show, tell us how you started with your whole business.
Well, I think it probably started in 1978 when I realized that I could move the furniture in my bedroom. So ever since then, I've just had a passion for all things home. And when you skip spring break in Florida with your friends to go home and stencil your bedroom, you probably have an issue.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So naturally, I ended up in pharmaceutical sales.
Oh, of course you did. That.
So anyway, after several years of doing pharmaceutical sales, I really needed to do something that filled my soul. And I looked back to those early roots and I thought, geez, I think I can mingle the sales and marketing that I've learned over the years with my love of interiors and decor. And I started my business in 2011 doing real estate staging.
That's really great. I think everything you do in life, it brings you to where you are today. And I think that definitely yes. applies to you. And hopefully everyone uses their gifts when they do so, as you have. So tell us, why should you stage your home when you're selling it?
Yeah. So the internet has really changed the way that we sell, both from the perspective of the way a home gets marketed, but also the way that buyers have access to information today about your house. When I bought my first house in 2000, there was no realtor.com and Zillow.com, and the realtor held all of the information. I didn't get to see the inside of a house until I was actually inside of the house. Today, true. We have online listing photos. And what happens with online listing photos is that people will put in their criteria, you know, number of bedrooms, price point, community, and then a whole list of homes will pop up. And they are starting their sorting process right there at the computer. We know that more than 90% of people start their search that way. Mm-hmm. Once they start their search and they've identified the houses that look good to them in the online photos, they then reach out to the realtor and schedule a showing. So from that perspective, your photos have become incredibly important. And that's why staging has grown the way it has, because our skill set allows us to help you keep that in mind, the focus on the online listing photos, and stage your home in a way that it will jump off the page when somebody's looking at it online.
I would think that HGTV has probably helped your business. I know at one point no one understood what staging is or how it could increase the value of your home or having your home being able to sell it at the designated selling price. So I would think that TV has helped. Is that true?
It definitely has. Absolutely. I think the more share of voice, this goes back to my sales and marketing days, the more share of voice you have around anything, a product, a service, an idea, the more mainstream it becomes. And I've seen just in the short time I've been in my business, the 4 years, the continued growth of people's understanding of the importance and the need to stage and their willingness to explore it as an option for their marketing.
So, okay, what's the difference between staging and interior design or decorating?
It's a great question because they are very different, and a lot of people think that they are the same, and they're really not. So I mentioned that piece about the online listing photos. When we are staging, we keep that in mind, and I'll walk through a home with a client, and I will actually get out my phone with the camera function on and look at the room and understand how the realtor or the photographer is going to shoot the photos, and then we compose the room in order to capture the best aspects of that room in a photo. And we don't think as much about the function of the space, what preferences the homeowner loves, needs, wants in their home. It really is more about creating a beautiful photo that appeals to most buyers. And when I say most buyers, we know that many times we're the likelihood that we're selling to somebody younger than us is very high. So we have to keep that in mind. But in decorating and design, we're really thinking about all of those things I mentioned that we don't consider the function of the room necessarily, or the colors and how they, you know, how the homeowner loves them or hates them, and, you know, all of that. So
yeah, I know I fall in the category as I cannot visualize. Like you've said, since you were younger, you could visualize a room when things are moved and the colors and the functionality. But I think that is a wonderful help to those who don't have that ability to visualize a room differently and the way it needs to be for the mainstream in order to sell it. So I think that's really great. That's great. Now, do you offer interior design also, or?
We occasionally will work on decorating and design projects. Our main focus is the staging. We feel like that's where the strength in our business lies, but we're happy to entertain a decorating project here or there. And, you know, sometimes it's not even so much about the project, but maybe more about the client. They just, you know, they resonate, we resonate, and we just think, you know, we want to take that because they seem like they'd be wonderful to work with. So, but yeah, staging is really our core business focus.
Okay, that's great. So how do you stage a home to sell it?
Yeah, so I think that, again, we go back to that online listing photo is the key, and I would encourage anybody to walk through their home with a camera, because what's amazing is this, and you and I were just talking about this, what you see in real life is sometimes different than what a camera lens can capture. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I always talk about, you know, when you go to a party and you see yourself in that dress that you thought was so fabulous, and then you go, oh, wow, I didn't realize it hit me quite like that. When did I get a
it's
double chin?
It's good to have another eye. Yeah.
When did I get that double chin? So I encourage everybody to do that because it's a really useful tool, and it actually helps you see your house better when you're looking at it through the lens of a camera. And the other thing that people have sometimes a challenge understanding is how pared down things have to be. You almost have to think of a hotel room. When you walk into a hotel room, there is very little in the way of accessorizing on, you know, nightstands, on the desk they provide, and really staging your house is very, very similar. A lot of people have a lot of things.
Yeah.
I'll count myself in there. But if you're staging your house, you have to remember those, you know, a lot of accessories don't photograph well and things like that. So, but I would say start with the camera first.
Lori declutters the double chins in your home. So, okay. So what is the most important thing a seller or realtor needs to get the house staged and ready to sell?
Yeah. I mean, I think that piece of one, removing yourself from the process and recognizing that it's an important step today, I think that's sometimes the hardest part for people. We love our homes. We end up feeling very comfortable in our homes. And we, as a result, don't see our homes the way they're going to end up looking in an online listing photo, or ultimately, you know, the messages they may convey to a buyer. So I think walking through with, you know, kind of removing yourself from it with the camera again, or somebody who you trust, who you think will tell you the truth, you know, is an important step to take. But I think the most important thing is realizing that every house probably could use staging. Even the neatest homes can always use staging, and that you, it's a different beast, and you should explore it and, you know, implement.
I think so too. I think we all need an outside unbiased eye. I think the decluttering and organizing the areas are probably very important, which we all probably can use just on a daily basis.
Yes.
But also, now, do you rent the furniture? Do you restage the existing furniture in someone's home?
Yes. One of my favorite things to do is when we do a 2-hour staging evaluation, we will actually shop the house. And, you know, a lot of times what we'll find is that one room may have more furniture than is actually needed, and another room may have less than is actually needed. Okay. And a lot of times we can be moving things from room to room, or, you know, we need bedside tables. So, hey, we'll look at these two little bookcases for in your children's playroom. There now, your nightstands, you know, okay, things like that. So, that's...
You can be creative that way.
Absolutely. And then we do fill homes with rental furnishings and accessories when somebody has moved out already. But that's, very different situation than actually living in your house. We typically start with shopping the house first and then assembling a list of anything that we think needs to be added.
Or taken away. No, mm-hmm. That's really great. So tell me a little bit more about the staging evaluation, a 2-hour service that you offer.
Yeah, so the staging evaluation is up to 2 hours. And what we do is we walk through with the homeowner and sometimes with the realtor as well at the same time. And we'll go room by room and we'll do exactly what I said. We'll talk about how the room's going to be photographed, how we can make those photos look their best, what needs to be packed up, you know, what can stay, what can be relocated. We'll poke through closets, as you mentioned. All the closets that are, overflowing with things, they tell somebody that your house doesn't have enough storage. And that could be completely untrue. Cupboards that are overly stuffed in the kitchen or pantry, again, they tell people maybe there's not enough storage. So we'll go through all of those kind of little private, we'll get all up in your junk.
Yeah. Good thing you look very trustworthy there, Lori.
And we'll build our room by room plan. And then when we're done, we give such specific direction that many of our homeowners are able to execute the plans entirely themselves. And to me, that's the most rewarding because, and I know this may sound, maybe a little funny, but there's a mental shift that happens. We all experience it. Whenever we clean out a closet or organize a space, we feel so much better. And when we feel better in our spaces, I really feel like that energy gets conveyed and it imbues the house. And I think a lot of times that just that mental shift means a lot in the fast sale of a home.
I would agree. When you declutter or de-junk or, it's such a cleansing experience.
It's fabulous.
Everyone should try it. So how can our audience find out more about your 2-hour staging evaluation?
Yeah, well, I have a website, www.rethinkhomeinteriors.com. That's rethinkhomeinteriors.com. And that's the best way to gather my contact information and reach out.
List of services there. Please come back and join us for our second segment with Lori Fisher from Rethink Home Interiors. This is Balanced Life, and I'm Renee Gable, the host of In Touch Marketing.
Be the center, be my source, be my life, Jesus.
Hi, I'm Lori Fisher with Rethink Home Interiors. I can help you get your home sold quickly. How? Let me help you stage your home to sell. It's still a buyer's market, so let me help you separate your house from all of the others on the market. You can call today for your personal staging evaluation. Contact me for an appointment at 610-724-1108 or visit me at rethinkhomeinteriors.com.
Hi, everybody. Phil Valentine here. It's great to be back on the air in Philly, and especially when my show is being broadcast from the Cradle of Liberty, Valley Forge area, home of freedom-loving patriots both in times past and today, right here on WFYL 1180 AM.
1, 2, 3.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, inviting you to join me for Backstage Jazz. I'll spend an hour each week taking you behind the music and into the lives of America's top jazz musicians. Experience live jazz music and connect with the artists through backstage interviews. Join us right here for this season of Backstage Jazz. Broadcasting Saturday afternoon at 4 and streaming Sunday night at 6 on WFYL.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
If you like Car Talk, catch Under the Hood Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 to 7. Exclusively streaming on 1180WFYL.com. Worldwide on your computer or mobile device. Stream Under the Hood this Saturday morning from 6 to 7 at 1180WFYL.com or on your favorite mobile device. Go to our website at 1180WFYL.com to find out more.
Hi, friends. Janet Parshall here, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall. I'm excited about partnering with 1180 AM WFYL to bring you a fast-paced conversation every Sunday. As you listen to In the Market, we'll examine major news stories and issues, equipping you to be bold when voicing truth in a confused and chaotic culture. I look forward to engaging my new friends at 1180 AM WFYL every Sunday at 12:05 p.m. on In the Market.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Balanced Life. I'm the host, Renee Gable, with In Touch Marketing Concepts, and we are still here with Lori Fisher from Rethink Home Interiors. All right, Lori, we're learning so much today, the decluttering, the organizing, the staging of a home. So let's see what we want to talk about on our second segment. You've been teaching us how to stage our homes and sell them faster and to dwell happier, but I'm sure there are mistakes that people make when staging the home themselves. So what are they?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the biggest one that people tend to make is just overall, we all have it. I think I alluded to it earlier, which is kind of house blindness. We tend to not see certain things in our homes. And, you know, I get a kick out of this whenever I go home to my childhood home, which is beautiful. My mom's done a beautiful job. But when I look at it through the eyes of a stager, I see it very differently than I do as a child who grew up in that home. And it's so I think that's the first thing. And that's where that camera becomes very important. The other thing is that what people don't realize is how far you have to go in your pre-packing phase in order to make the house look its best. You actually have to be quite ruthless and okay. Pared down as far as, you know, taking things almost entirely off your kitchen counters, for example. Most people don't realize that, you know, you have to pretty much clear everything off, or not realizing that family photos, you know, small photos on walls, things like that, they don't read well in a photograph. So those things should come off of a wall. The other thing is that your house sends messages. And I mentioned a couple of those earlier, like lack of storage space would be one where, you know, a linen closet is overflowing with towels and sheets and, you know, hair care products or something like that. That says no storage. Whether it's true or not, those are kind of snap judgments that a buyer will make. Also, some of the things that people can assume from your home is, you know, if maybe you've painted, but, you know, you're not the best painter, you know, how well cared for has this home been? You could have completely updated windows and, you know, plumbing and all of that, but sometimes people get nervous if they see things like, you know, unkempt paint or maybe stains on carpet that speak to maybe the bigger condition of a home. So all of those things really matter. Pretty much everything matters.
Everything matters.
Not to overwhelm.
It's a balanced life and everything matters.
Everything matters. It's all important. And I think I wanted to say that too. With the staging mm-hmm. evaluation, the one thing that I have learned is that people really appreciate the plan. I say that it's peace of mind in the form of a plan, because when you know what to do and you know that somebody who's experienced is telling you that this is what you should do, you feel better about it. You feel more in control. And there's so much that you're not in control in the real estate process. You're not in control mm-hmm. of what the offer is going to be and when. You're not in control of the inspection report or the appraisal and all of that. This is one aspect where you are absolutely in control. And that gives a lot of people peace of mind once they realize, okay, here's my to-do list, room by room, I can get this done.
Yeah, I've seen on your Facebook and your YouTube channel, you teach people how to organize in 30 days, or you give them tips, because yes, I do see this as an emotional time, and you do have to take the emotion out of it. And I think that plan, as you're saying, does help you do that. Mm-hmm. You have an action plan, you're executing it and staying focused, and you will help people if they do feel overwhelmed. You will actually help them, not just with the plan, but also executing.
We do.
The job.
We have a wonderful team in place that helps with, you know, any or all of it. You know, we have one plan where it's pretty much the kick back and sip champagne plan, because we'll take care of
everything plan.
Right up to the sale.
That's great. I like that option. So does every area of the house have to be staged?
That's an awesome question. Yeah. And the answer to that question is typically no. According to research, there are a couple of things you have to really focus on. The first is, in a study that was done where researchers looked at the eye movements of people viewing online listing photos, what photos they stayed on the longest and what went back to the most frequently, that was the front of the house. So that picture actually has to be in place on your online listing photo, and you have to make sure that your curb appeal is really beautiful as a result. But you know, you don't have to spend thousands. Make sure your mailbox looks nice, your front door is painted, maybe some mulch and some new flowers, and the lawn is mowed. I mean, it doesn't have to be new hardscaping or anything like that. The other rooms that I say that most people should focus their time, energy, efforts, and finances in are those first few rooms that people see. We know that people make, you know, a judgment within the first minute whether they're going to buy or not. So I always say, you know, if you've done a great job on those first few rooms, the pink and black bathroom circa 1950 upstairs will not matter. But if you haven't addressed that, that same bathroom becomes one more thing on a long list that people are already overwhelmed with in your house. So spend the most time in those first few spaces. If it means wallpaper has to come out because it's old and dated, then that's where I would do it. But you could leave that same wallpaper up in a third bedroom.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, that applies for when we bought our home, but I definitely agree. They make that decision from the curb appeal to the first few rooms, and that's it. So we're such a visual society that everything you're saying makes sense, mm-hmm. but I'd never thought of it from the restaging eye mm-hmm. myself, or the staging eye. So Lori, tell us what your service area is.
Well, locally for hands-on work, we cover that was Montgomery and Bucks all mixed together there. Yeah. we also cover Chestnut Hill, Manayunk, and Roxborough in the city, as well as the Main Line. And then online, I actually mm-hmm. teach a course twice a year, helping homeowners across the country learn how to stage their homes themselves. And I have also worked with homeowners where we have them photograph their spaces, and then I review their homes with them and give them a plan based on what I see. So I can really work with anybody anywhere.
I can imagine we could Skype you in if we had
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, that's wonderful. And you have an awesome record. Tell us about the homes you've staged and sold?
Yeah, so it's really funny. I have a business coach, and my business coach said, after hearing my story, he said, you know, you should call yourself the Days on Market Eraser, which I loved.
Oh, I love that.
Because 85% of our houses sell in the first 2 weeks, and many of those will sell in the first weekend. Just last week, we had 4 houses sell in the first 3 days, which to me is so amazing, because I feel like when somebody commits and they do this work and they reap that kind of benefit, we can literally move them forward in their lives. And that is, to me, more meaningful than any, you know, bowl of fruit I can put on a counter.
It's true. And that's, you know, brings it back to a balanced life, being able to move people forward. They're probably transitioning, downsizing or upsizing when they meet you. So, and you do work with realtors and sellers directly, correct?
I do. Yeah, I get inquiries from both sides of that equation. I get inquiries from people who are getting ready to sell. And then I have those that that have been on the market and they're looking to do something different to sell.
That's great. And that, like we said, that is a balanced life, being able to move forward. But Lori, as a business owner, a career person, a mom, and a wife, how do you balance life on a more personal note?
Wow. Yeah. I'm not sure that I do very well all the time, but I think I'm forgiving. And I realize that, you know, the to-do list in my life a lot of times can wait for me, understanding that not everything's an emergency, and understanding and knowing that I may not get to everything, but I do the best I can. And smile.
Yes,
and laugh.
I do love the forgiveness part and the humor side of it too. So how would our audience get in touch with you to help them stage?
Yes, the website is the best place to go. You can learn more about me and my contact information right at rethinkhomeinteriors.com.
Thank you for joining us today, Lori. I learned so much. I hope our audience did too. Thank you for teaching us how to balance our lives. I am Renee with In Touch Marketing Concepts. Thank you for joining us today on Balanced Life, because a balanced life matters.
Hi, I'm Lori Fisher with Rethink Home Interiors. I can help you get your home sold quickly. How? Let me help you stage your home to sell. It's still a buyer's market, so let me help you separate your house from all of the others on the market. You can call today for your personal staging evaluation. Contact me for an appointment at 610-724-1108 or visit me at rethinkhomeinteriors.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Medveski, Medveski Law. Are you losing sleep at night thinking about debts? Worried about your mortgage payment, college tuition, or car payments? And on top of that, credit cards and other debt? Fresh start may be what you need. Bankruptcy could be the answer. I offer free consultations. Contact me at Medveski Law. My phone number is 215-660-3170, or you can visit me at medveskilaw.com. That's MedveskyLaw.com.
Good morning and welcome to Balanced Life. I'm the host, Renee Gable, with In Touch Marketing Concepts. This morning we're here with Mark Medveski from Medveski Law Offices. Did I get it right, Mark?
Yeah, that's
it. I think I might have you say it from here on out. Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. How about you?
Good. Thank you for joining us today. Mark is a lawyer with Medveski. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm a lawyer with the Medveski Law Office.
He's saving me here. Thank you.
And it's my own office. It's out in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's a general practice firm. I do consumer bankruptcy, wills, estates. Starting to do a little bit of immigration work. But almost any legal issue you have, I'm willing to talk to you about it and see if I can help you out and get you in the right spot if I'm not the right person for you.
Wow, immigration. That's quite a broad topic there, Mark. I feel like so many immigrants are in flux right now with the law and...
It's a very broad law. It's very complicated. I've done, you know, like I said, I do bankruptcy. I've done criminal law. I've done a lot of different types of law. And by far, immigration has been the most complex and at times has the most at risk because, you know, there's people in this country who have a nationality other than U.S. and have never lived in that country. And they're fighting every day to stay in this country and do it the right way. So it gets difficult.
So tell us a little bit about business immigration versus family immigration.
Business immigration obviously is not really necessarily immigration when it starts. And that's where different businesses need expertise or a certain amount of labor. And they'll go to the State Department and request special visas and bring people into work, and they're turned out and sent back.
Okay.
Family immigration is when someone has come to the United States and wants to stay, wants to bring their husband, their children, maybe their parents, and that is in a shorter term is more immediate. I mean, ultimately, when people come here for business, you know, the end result is a permanent residency and citizenship. But like I said, that progresses through a working relationship. And then family is once somebody's come into the United States or has a U.S. citizen, marry someone outside the United States to bring them in as part of their family.
Yeah, I never thought of the business side of immigration, but that's true. There are so many employers that bring in those that have visas and that are able to work with them and such. And I didn't realize there was a whole legal aspect to the immigrant side too. So you're able to help on either side, the business side or the family side. Is that correct?
I've helped with some business visas. Mm-hmm. Some countries have special treaties with the United States. I've worked on with some Australians to bring employees or keep employees in the country. Some of the visas and some of the work for business immigration, it's big companies and there's caps. You hear about these caps out mm-hmm. there, and there's a very strict timeline. So because I'm such a small office, I won't necessarily work for a large company trying to get a mass workforce in.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the less time-sensitive matters and employees I could help out with. And then I've been doing family visas. I've been within the last year, I had a... some U.S. citizens, their parents immigrated into the United States and never became citizens. And the father had some medical issues and some competency issues. So there were reasons for him to become a citizen even at his late age. He was in his 70s. And it had some challenges because we had to get waivers because he couldn't understand the test on the United States history. He would lapse between English and his native language, so it took a little bit of work. But ultimately, he became a U.S. citizen and availed himself of some of the benefits in which he had earned because he was paying taxes and contributing to Medicare and that kind of thing since the 1950s.
Wow.
So we helped them. I've helped a couple young couples who met in college or high school, and one person wasn't in the country legally. And so we've helped adjust status.
No, that's great. If you've turned on the news, you've heard about the deferred action for childhood arrivals and those that were born and raised here but yet may not have U.S. citizenship. Is that correct?
Right. Well, they wouldn't have been born here. But I don't know that Americans or U.S. citizens really understand when they talk about the DREAM Act and DACA, the deferred action. So what that really deals with is it's young children who were brought into the country by their parents. They had no choice. They had no place to stay in their home country. And they were brought in either legally in one visa status or another and then just didn't go home, or they were brought in illegal across the border. And as you know, there's schools, and you know, once you establish yourself, they've gone to school here, they've had proms, they did their part-time jobs under the table, and they've never lived in their own culture in their own country. And now they become of age, or 18, 19 years old, they realize they can't work legally, and it's harder and harder for people to give them jobs. And they're kind of stuck between two worlds.
Kind of lost in the system.
Yeah, and there's no easy there was no easy way for them to change their status to being legal. And so what the president did, because Congress wasn't acting, was he said, look, if you come to us and tell us you came here as a child, and there's a couple other factors, but you haven't been in trouble, you've been doing what you're supposed to do, you register, you are not going to be a priority for us to send you back to your native country, and we'll even let you work, and we're going to let you be part of the U.S. economy, the U.S. society, as we try to fix all this and get it all working. And then the next step, obviously, would be to fix the immigration system that we're having problems with now.
I guess you can't fix that part. Yeah. But yep. You can help some families that are here and are experiencing some difficulty.
There are some mechanisms. They're hard. If you entered the country legally to begin with, and you know your parents kept you here, you stayed here and created a life, and you got married, so you may be eligible for what's called adjustment of status, and that is to say your status at that moment is illegal or undocumented, depending on who you talk to and how you want to phrase it. And then you make the application to U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement and say, hey, I've been here. I'm married to a U.S. citizen. Because you stayed here beyond your visa, it's called inadmissibility. You're not supposed to be here. If you left, you wouldn't be able to come back. So with the marriage of a U.S. citizen, that either doesn't count if you came into the country legally, or if you came in illegally, you can have asked to have that inadmissibility waived.
Okay.
And so that's another form.
Okay.
And if you're successful, then you'll go ahead and you'll get the person who makes these applications will get their residency or green card. If it's based on marriage, it's a conditional green card. That means it's good for 2 years. And at the end of 2 years, you have to show that the marriage continues and it's still legit, or it was legit. And then after you remove the conditions, then you get a green card for 10 years, and then you just maintain your status in the United States legally. So that's one way.
Okay. So there's common law wives and husbands. So is there common law citizens? No.
No. And what happened? Well, I shouldn't say that. You know what? I haven't come across it. Mm-hmm. I know in the law there are certain – you know, the other thing with the law, it's so complex. There's so many categories. So say an American citizen is living abroad and has a paramour or spouse from a foreign country, has a child, and never brings a child – and didn't bring the child to the United States before that marriage dissolved. Is that child a U.S. citizen or not? And there are about 5 or 6 different time periods where the answer is different, or you have to supply.
Oh, my.
So when I get a question like that, I have this law book that's about 4 or 5 inches thick I have to find this scale and start looking at when the child was born, when the relationship was, and what laws applied. So
that probably gets sticky, and it probably depends on the country.
Well, no, it's going to depend. I mean, because it's our laws. You're immigrating into the United States, so it's immigration law. But it's all going to depend on what the law was what the law was at the time of the child's birth.
Oh, boy.
So the problem with the immigration system, when you talk about it being broken, it's so complex that even lawyers like myself who are trying to start have to be extremely careful and go through it and then talk to other attorneys to make sure that we're not falling through one of those traps, because there's a date that we didn't understand you know, or a date, 2 days can make a difference in the significance of the status of a person.
And it probably matters who was in the administration at the time, too, or no?
Well, the law doesn't, but what we're talking about when you're talking about DECA mm-hmm. and the deferred action, that's an administration issue. That's not a law.
Yeah.
What that is the president who has said, who is responsible for enforcing the laws of their country, has said, I have certain priorities and I have certain resources. So I have to place my resources against the priorities as I see fit.
Yeah.
And to put law enforcement and enforcement resources against a group of people who have done, who pose no threat to our community, is a waste of resources. So as a whole, I'm not going to enforce against this group of people. And that's what he said.
Okay.
And when this president leaves, if the next president changes those priorities, that whole policy can be pushed to the side.
Okay, boy, thank goodness for lawyers such as Mark Medveski from Medveski Law Offices to help individuals sort out these challenges, because who knew it was this involved. So please come back and join us for our second segment, and Mark can set us straight. Mark, do you want to give a phone number that our audience can contact you?
Yes, if you have questions for me, my phone number is 215-660-3170. Again, 215-660-3170.
Come back and we'll learn much more. Renee with In Touch Marketing Concepts. Jesus.
Hi, I'm Mark Medveski, Medveski Law. Are you losing sleep at night thinking about debts? Worried about your mortgage payment, college tuition, or car payments? And on top of that, credit cards and other debt? Fresh start may be what you need. Bankruptcy could be the answer. I offer free consultations. Contact me at Medveski Law. My phone number is 215-660-3170, or you can visit me at medveskilaw.com. That's MedveskyLaw.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Balanced Life. I'm the host, Renee Gable, with In Touch Marketing Concepts, and we are talking with Mark Medveski with Medveski Law Offices. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
Mark's main areas of practice are consumer bankruptcy, immigration, wills, living wills, and power of attorney. And today we're talking about immigration. But before we get onto that subject, I just want to say, if you ever meet Mark, he's the most approachable attorney you've ever met. He always has a smile on his face. It's very refreshing. So we thank you for that.
Thanks.
So he'll always welcome you with a warm smile, no matter what your issue or case may be. But getting back to immigration, you know, we were talking over the break that immigration, it's where do we put the borders? Like, how do we stop all this? Or what do we do? What's the answer? It's a pretty big country to put a fence around it.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we're, as a country, what we're struggling with is exactly that. How do we regulate it? You know, I worked for Immigration Customs Enforcement for a while, and I had opportunities to speak a lot about immigration and fixing the problem, or what's perceived as a problem. And, you know, and as an attorney doing this kind of work, I interface with a lot of advocate groups who believe that everybody in the country that's here should be allowed to stay. And I've even had discussions with Catholic nuns out of Reading about how they didn't really like what I was doing when I was working for ICE. And generally, my question back is, well, is it your position that the United States should have open borders? And I can't really say that I've ever had anybody say, well, no, of course not. We shouldn't have open borders. And I said, well, then where would you draw the line? And the conversation really takes a turn at that point. And that's what the discussion we're having now in this country is, where do we draw the line? And I don't know that I have any one person has the answer, if I have the answer. I think a start would be is to recognize we need to draw a line. I don't think that open borders are the best thing for our country, and then start figuring out where that line's going to be drawn.
Would we really be a country if there weren't any borders, you know?
Well, you know, Europe is experimenting with it right now with the European community, and they're having their challenges. And you're right. I mean, isn't that part of sovereignty? So, I mean, I think the people in our country have a right to feel protected and monitored and or not monitored. I don't want to be monitored, but no. That the borders be monitored
right.
To prevent the type of people or the type of
just rules and regulations.
Yeah.
Who's allowed in the country
right.
And who isn't, and for what period of time, and
right.
What happens when you get married,
right.
And
we talk about that. So, you know, going back to the marriage issue. So, what does happen when a U.S. citizen gets married to someone who is from another country? And you know, the first question is where is your spouse? If you got married overseas, it's going to be one process, and if they're in that person is in the country, it's going to be a little bit different process. So say you're living outside the United States and on business, and you marry somebody from another country. Well, what you do is the first thing you do is you ask for a K. You request a K visa, K-1, K-2 or 3, depending if it's a fiance or spouse or family member. And then the visa is granted. So if you're not married, if you're married, you get the K visa, you come in, and then at that point you make a request to adjust status to become a legal permanent resident. If it's a fiancé visa, at another K visa, the person comes in, and within 90 days you have to be married. You get married, and at that point you adjust status to become a legal permanent resident. And so that in and of itself seems pretty orderly. A lot of paperwork, and you know, the bureaucracy in our government is always tough. And I think at times we mistrust our government, some rightly so and some probably not warranted. Again, as a former member of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, I can tell you the people I worked with were true professionals and really tried to do a fair job and work with people. I still have
And absolutely, because so many are contributing to society and mm-hmm. the community and working hard and
absolutely,
yeah.
And you know, we were talking again on break. We were talking about, you know, we're in an aging population, and mm-hmm. soon there are a lot of countries who have experienced an aging population where they were required also to bring. To develop immigration so that their country survives. And there are studies that show that legal and healthy immigration is a good for a country. And that's really, really where we should be striving to do. Again, I think our lines of conversation break down when we lump illegal immigration or undocumented workers and legal immigration, because both of those are not necessarily good for the country. They don't contribute, I don't think personally, they contribute equally to the country. I mean, obviously, maybe not so obviously, I believe that when people have a purpose to come in and we regulate it, it's healthy mm-hmm. and it helps the country. That's not to say some of the illegal immigration isn't good for the country, because we have such stifling laws that, you know, there are good people who come in the mm-hmm. wrong way and are contributing to our society, and that should be recognized. And then we need to keep out those who do not contribute well or take away or detract from our society. And that's really who we want to keep out, I think. So I'm a big proponent. I mean, I believe in legal immigration, because that's mm-hmm. the people I can help and do want to help. For those who are here in country for the right reasons and maybe not the right way, I would love to have avenues to help them, and I would work with them to try to find those avenues, whether they got married or whether there's some waiver program put in place, and do that. So I mean, those are the questions that are facing us as a country, how we're going to deal with that.
It's definitely a tough topic, I think, but we've all come from immigrants somewhere along the way, right? We all brought here and
I mean,
in one form or another. So
I think if I'm right, I'm just the second or third generation born in the country. From on my father's side, it's Russian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, there's reasons to have a good, healthy immigration system.
So can all illegal immigrants get married, and will that solve the problem of their citizen status, so to speak?
It can be a way to do it. And like I said, mm-hmm. we would adjust status if...
But it has to be a legitimate marriage, right?
That's the thing. And you know what? You run into it, and because it, at times we expect the worst from people who are in tough times, it gets mm-hmm. looked at very closely. So when I'm talking to my clients who are trying to adjust status, you know, I'm constantly, you know, things that you and I wouldn't think about, they need to think about mm-hmm. it. I don't know how about you, but on my household mm-hmm. bills, some of the bills are in my name, some are in my wife's name. Mm-hmm. When I have clients, if they're, you know, I try to point out to them that anything that they can be in joint names should be in joint names. I look at, you know, health insurance. I look at pay stubs. What's your pay stub? Do you ever look at that, whether you're marked as single or married?
No, it's too scary. And then you have to look at the taxes. Oh.
Yeah.
It's not all about me. Okay, sorry.
And, you know, it's stuff that we don't really think about. It's not mm-hmm. a big deal. But someone who is trying to show that they are legitimately married really need to think about those things.
And I think it must really get tricky when they have children. And what happens with the children if the marriage dissolves and one goes back to an original country? I mean, it must get very scary.
That's a... Well, and I mean, and that's why there's international laws. And, you know, mm-hmm. the other thing is when you're dealing with that, and I'm not sure if that's an immigration issue or family issue, there's countries who have custody laws are much different than ours. I happened to be speaking to networking one time with an attorney who practiced in Japan. And in Japan, if you divorce, the mm-hmm. court determines or the parents determine who's going to be the primary parent. And then the other parent has almost no rights at all. He worked with a lot of military people over there, and he was saying that people couldn't understand that they were only getting 1 hour or 2 hours of supervised visitation a month under a Japanese system. Now, that's a story.
Interesting.
But, you know, I don't know the validity of it, but that's mm-hmm. a story coming from another attorney who was doing some of that work in there. The good part with immigration into the United States is if you marry somebody who has children already, they're derivative. The children's have a right to come into the United States as a result of their parents entering the United States legally. So, you know, you'll file some of the same paperwork for the children, but then once they get here, permanent residency is established. The children have that status as well. And so some of the system or some of the things we do make sense. Mm-hmm. But you got to make sure you fill out the right paperwork. I've had clients who thought that they could bring their stepchildren in on the same document, and they really needed different documents. So it kind of got tied up in the bureaucracy and had to work through to get the right documents filed for the children as well as the spouse. But ultimately, it'll work out. We hope. You know, mm-hmm. the other scary part is just like any other system, and I always tell people, the legal system is a system of people. And that has a tremendous impact on what happens if someone wakes up in a bad mood or is unhappy with something. And it's not that they're intentionally trying to hurt someone, but you know, subconsciously, they're not thinking favorably, and they make decisions along that line.
So, well, I think it's good to know you need to bring in an attorney that knows what documentation you need that can help in the process. So, Mark, how would our audience get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me is give me a call, 215-660-3170.
Thank you very much for joining us today. I learned a lot. I know that. So well, thank you, Mark Medveski with Medveski Law Office. And I am Renee Gable with InTouch Marketing. Thank you.
Jesus, be the center.
Hi, I'm Mark Medveski, Medveski Law. Are you losing sleep at night thinking about debts? Worried about your mortgage payment, college tuition, or car payments? And on top of that, credit cards and other debt? Fresh start may be what you need. Bankruptcy could be the answer. I offer free consultations. Contact me at Medveski Law. My phone number is 215-660-3170, or you can visit me at medveskilaw.com. That's MEDVESKY law.com.